And it was important for us to do it, even though it is extra work to maintain two separate brands, but it was important for us to do it so that we were not just catering to the clinical side, which would only be 20%, but investing a lot on the direct-to-consumer side, because the biggest part of that is education.
Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for listening to the show. I would love if you could give us your opinion on how you felt about the show, your experience that you have in regards to what we've been talking about. I am having an absolute blast, but your input is like dynamite on that explosion. So give us your input. We'd love to hear from you. Any questions, comments, concerns, give us everything you got. We love it. Thanks. Hope you're having an awesome day. Welcome to 7 to 8, our special series on 7 to 8 figure entrepreneurs. In this special series, I interview $1 million, some $10 million, and even some $1 million business owners who uncover their twists and turns in their entrepreneurial adventure in order to help you to avoid the potholes and stick to the fast track. Welcome now to Center Stage, our next special guest. Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec, and I'm super glad that you're here with us today because I'm here with my most amazing guest, Somsom. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you being up late at night, London time, just for me. So, I always appreciate
it. No, this is not late
hours.
At all. It's only 10:30, and a lot of my calls are with the Pacific Coast in California, so I have calls at midnight. Often.
Right. So give everybody the highlight of who you are and what you do for business.
I'm Som. I am a biomedical engineer. I started Mystery Vibe 10 years ago. And the goal for us was to bring the best of engineering with medical research to create devices which can help with major life events like pain after childbirth, dryness after menopause, recovery after cancer, like with erectile dysfunction after prostate cancer. So very much major life events which happen inevitably in all of our lives, and how can devices with the right amount of medical know-how and engineering technology make it very accessible for people to solve problems.
Nice, I love it. So we will absolutely get into all of that, but how did you get into, let's call it, sexual health a thing?
So my first work in biomedical was in ophthalmology, working with eye doctors to create biometrics, looking at eyes, building cameras, mostly used in security and defense. This is back in 2004 during my PhD. And then that became a little company that got sold in 2009. And then I spent a few years in consulting. And one of the main things that came up while working and traveling are various life events and how it affects sexual health, people having kids, people having pain after that, not being able to be intimate, aging-related stuff, heart disease-related stuff, diabetes-related stuff, cancer-related stuff. So a lot of the stuff, and this is more than 10 years ago when we were talking about it, there was hardly any discussion either in the press or even by doctors or between people in this field of sexual health. There was very little talked about, very few solutions. So, and we always knew as our core team of co-founding team, we always knew that we wanted to get back into biomedical after our last exit. So this seemed like a topic that really mattered, that had a massive potential to impact people's health, and equally was one of those areas in health which was overlooked. So it seemed like an area we wanted to focus on by finding the right medical partners. And we were very lucky to find our chief medical officer, Professor Dasgupta, who is the head of urology at King's College here in London, and one of the most senior urologists in the world, who had researched on vibration even 30 years ago, when hardly anyone knew vibration had an impact. So So we could bring together really deep expertise from him, from lots of other OBGYNs, pelvic floor therapists, andrologists, urologists in US, in UK, in Europe, and bring all of that know-how together with our engineering expertise and build 6 devices now in various areas.
Nice. Very good. I love it. And we will definitely get into those devices in a little bit. Oh, want to back up the bus a little bit and go as a, I guess, as a product, you have some experience in business, a lot of experience in business and building them from scratch and getting funding for them. Did you find that there was an easier kind of way to one or the other? Do they have their kind of benefits to each and their downsides to each? Or what was your experience with that?
I guess the with funding, for example, I guess the biggest challenge is how long something takes in medical devices. So you need very patient investors who are happy to wait for 10 years to see their investment create something of significant value. So, and not all investors, and it's totally fair to them, that not all investors want to have that kind of risk exposure for that long a period. So with medical devices, you know, it took us 5 years just to get to FDA. Then it took us another 3 years to get clinical trials published in journals. Then it took us another year to get on FSHSA. So, you know, like it's easily a 10-year plan to get to a point where you have a product which is safe, it's effective, it's proven, it's endorsed by doctors, it's published in journals, it's covered by reimbursement. Like, it's a really long journey. And then when you have ticked every box, then, you know, it can be hugely impactful. But it's one of those things you can't really do in 2 or 3 years, right? So with raising money in medtech, I would say it's really about finding the right investors who are passionate about solving that topic. And for them, it's normal that it would take 10 years to solve something worth solving. And they're very comfortable with it.
Nice. Well, you definitely picked something that was a little on the outer edges, say, compared to a heart palpitation.
You're absolutely right. That made it, that reduced the pool of investors significantly, especially traditional healthcare VCs. When we started, they didn't really have a focus on sexual health to start with. So you need to be within the thesis to attract investment. And what has happened over the years, over the past decade, is now sexual health is much more talked about now. It's much more strategic part of overall health. People understand the impact of it generally. And with the aging population, more people experience it, like prostate cancer, for example. So it becomes much more fundamental as a health topic, like heart disease, like diabetes. It becomes a very fundamental part. And as a result, there is a lot more discussion, there's a lot more investment, there's a lot more people working in it, which is exactly what we wanted, you know, when we started a decade ago.
Nice. Well, you definitely have an interesting approach. And it fascinates me from a business perspective that you chose to go kind of what I'm going to call the external route as opposed to the internal route, meaning that your devices aren't exactly something that you would sell to the medical industry. I'm assuming that you're going kind of the public route on this and having to get, it's very much business to consumer versus business to business, if you were to take the medical industry as business.
That's an excellent point. So when we started, one of the biggest things all the doctors we spoke to talked about was the lack of interaction between people and the medical community when it comes to sexual health. So for example, let's say you're struggling with pain or dryness. It might be years before you reach a doctor. You simply would suffer in silence. Similar with male sexual health, ED, ejaculation issues, prostate issues, and sadly often cancer. You know, if you'd never go for a prostate exam, it might be too late by the time you do find out you have cancer. So it's, and you know, even if you think of it as the 80-20 rule, where 80% of people never go to a doctor. So we created our company with two brands. So Mystery Vibe is very much the B2C brand, where we talk about pleasure, we talk about health, we talk about the medical side, we talk about, you know, just intimacy, a very soft approach towards bringing what is a medical solution to a sexual health issue, but in a very user-friendly way. But equally, we have another website, which is B2B, which is the MySexMD, and that is purely aimed at doctors or patients, and it has all the medical information. So, and it was important for us to do it, even though it is extra work to maintain two separate brands, but it was important for us to do it so that we were not just catering to the clinical side, which would only be 20%, but investing a lot on the direct-to-consumer side, because the biggest part of that is education and conversations. So if we can, let's say pelvic floor, if we can educate someone who has just given birth what a pelvic floor is, you know, how it was impacted, how various solutions, including our devices, can help, and why it's important. And this is simple, you know, it's not difficult to explain, but it's missing in most cases. So for example, let's say 80% of moms after childbirth will have pain, which is very common and very normal. But what is unfortunate is 50% will continue to have pain even after 2 years. And simply because they didn't have access to the knowledge of what to do, which is very simple. You know, it's not at all complicated to address most pelvic pain, 3 times a week therapy, or using a device, or, you know, very, very simple and accessible. So that's where the direct-to-consumer route is so important, because if those 80% have no time looking after a small baby, they don't really have time to go see a doctor, and 2, have no knowledge that they need to even consult someone, and just assume it will go away, right? So that's why the huge emphasis and investment from our side on a direct-to-consumer approach, where for 80%, not all, where we are doing the education, and some of that would buy our devices, but that's the secondary goal. But the primary goal is, how do you create the education and the conversation?
Well, and I think the conversation for everybody is extremely important, not just kind of postpartum, is to understand kind of the complexity of the issues. It is that it's not simply a, say a physical, like your bodily health issue. It's also, like you said, the emotional. It's also the impact that certain activities can have on it, whether in some cases just sitting and standing, let alone intercourse or other activities that are going to directly impact it. Are there any kind of projects that you're getting involved in to be able to kind of make this a bigger movement, to be able to get that education out to people?
Yes. So beyond the obvious, which is writing a lot of content on our blog, so we collaborate with a lot of big media. Currently, we're working with Guardian newspaper to have a big piece on how doctors and where the applications are of various vibration devices. So it's talking to various doctors that we work with, like a Cedars-Sinai, Mayo Clinic, Rush, Chicago, King's College here, and getting their input from different fields of sexual health, menopause, prostate cancer, post-cervical cancer recovery, pelvic pain, So bringing all of that together, and then the engineering side of how it all helps. So that's a big part, is working with press, working with media to get the conversations out there. Equally, another big part is working with hospitals like Mayo Clinic, them then talking about it using their channels. So like here, we're working with UCL, University College London, and they have a very big department on an extreme end of pelvic floor where mesh has caused problems and they need surgical intervention. The pain following that is obviously much greater than from childbirth. So I think the two key things is the credibility that comes through clinical trials, published papers, journals, conferences, and doctors. So that's one set. And then the reach that comes through bringing all that information, which is obviously great, but most people wouldn't read it, to the audiences of large newspapers like Guardian, read by 300 million people.
Nice. So are you still in the fundraising stage, or taking on public money to support the business?
We do it every few years. So not at the moment. So the last time we did a round was Jan 21. So we might do one again in 24. But our focus has always been about, when it comes to the commercial side, is about being profitable, so that it is a very simple business from a commercial perspective, so that we can invest our time on complex hardware and medical topics, you know, rather than worry about the business and how to keep the business growing. So in a way, we're very lucky that the business grows itself. Whereas we're only 15 people, so we're a very small company. So this is basically the direct consumer site with our small team, and a lot of automations, like with Shopify, with warehousing, you know, manufacturing. The whole automation allows it to scale organically with our small team. And then a lot of our time in the other part of the business can focus on R&D, medical research, collaborations, going to conferences, meeting doctors, getting their feedback, improving the product. And then from time to time, say every 3 years, we do a capital raise, but primarily to invest in R&D, do more, which we more than what we would normally do through our organic growth, and scale faster. So yeah, fundraising is not that often in terms of the rounds, but we would do them probably every 3 years.
Nice. And when it came to kind of design versus manufacturing, which one would you say was more entertaining, in good or bad ways? Which one was more challenging?
That's a really interesting point, because before, we only used to do design when we started in the early years, and we relied on the manufacturer to figure out the rest. But over time, we brought everything in-house. So we have end-to-end lab in Surrey, where we do our concepting, 3D printing, silicon, plastic, electronics, PCB, and manufacturing of thousands, not more than, say, 3,000. But the reason for doing all that in-house with our full-time team is then we understand and optimize and own the entire process. So when it goes to high-volume manufacturing, we simply have to send them instructions. And so this is exactly the step-by-step guide, and, you know, please follow this. And if you think there's something better, we are happy to listen. But at least the starting point, we have run a few thousand, and we think this is a really good starting point. And what that allows us to do is learn a lot of the lessons that typically we used to wait for months to learn from the manufacturer. Which just makes the product much better generally. So for us, the design and manufacturing is now one thing, end to end done by the same team in our labs. And I think there is so much fun in both. Whereas before, we wouldn't even know what the manufacturing bit was because it was very much handover and iterate. So now, you know, like with design, we can also feed back from manufacturing. So for example, when we are doing an assembly process of how to put together a device, you know, attach the motors, add the screws, put the silicone, we will learn things that would make us think, actually, this assembly can be easier, better, more consistent, or by making a small change, we can make the product look even better. And then that feeds back to the design. And then we can change the design, build prototypes, and change the manufacturing all, you know, by ourselves within a matter of a few weeks. And then by the time it goes to the manufacturer, they get something which is very well fine-tuned. And we will still make changes after that, but they won't be major because we've built a few thousand ourselves already.
Very cool. So when it comes to the biochemical or the chemistry of what you're, of the, I'm going to call them plastics, that might not be the right word, that you're using to be able to manufacture, is that team in-house as well? Are you doing outside research from that? How does that all go now?
Yes. So yes, that's a really important element of our devices is the material science. And the reason for that is all of our devices are malleable. And that's a key design principle in all our six devices and all our future devices, because everybody's different. And let's say, you know, when you talk about pelvic pain, the biggest challenge is not knowing where the pain is and having to discover it. So typically what a therapist would do, a PT, would use two fingers, reach inside and reach and massage the pain points and help alleviate the pain. And in order for a patient to do that to themselves, they need a device which is extremely malleable, you know, which can bend and take different shapes, reach, and be very precise at delivering the right vibrations. So all the materials, the PCB, the plastics, the silicone, everything is malleable. And we do them by researching on fusing different materials at different percentages and different temperatures and different moisture content to create these special fusion plastic. It's not really plastic. It's a mixture of like resin, plastic, polycarb, etc. And by doing that, we can, and then running it in our test chamber to see if it will withstand, say, 10,000 bends. It's because we give a 2-year no questions asked warranty. So let's say, you know, after a year, it breaks for some reason, we'll send you a new one. So we obviously make sure that it's been tested enough times that even if you used it every day for 2 years, it wouldn't break. So the, and we have a less than 0.1% return rate. So what that, what these malleable materials do is it allows it to be bent and stretched and flexed, you know, 10,000 plus times without losing its shape and rigidity and tensile strength. So that's one of our biggest challenges in the early years that we overcame, and now is one of our biggest assets.
Nice. Well, and my childish brain goes to an IKEA room where they have the compression units testing and going, that must be a really interesting place to walk into work when you have these things being tested.
I know, that's where I, even though I only spend 2 days a week in the lab, and then, you know, the other days doing operational stuff, admin stuff, finance stuff, etc. That's really where, if I could, I would spend 7 days.
Thanks. I love it. So when it comes to kind of people's skin sensitivity, have you noticed any kind of difference in that? Is it basically inert and you're not getting the skin sensitivity?
Yes. So medical silicone, which is the FDA silicone that we use, is inert. And I haven't come across anyone who has a sensitivity to that.
Nice. That's impressive.
Mm.
Very cool. I love it. So let's talk about your actual products themselves. I know you've mentioned you have ones for men, ones for women, ones particularly for postpartum. Is that true? Or if you can go through your kind of lineup, what do you
Yeah,
have?
so we focus on four main areas: pelvic pain, which is also falls under penetration pain, erectile dysfunction, and then arousal and dryness, mostly menopause, and prostate health, so prostatitis. So we have six devices. Some are similar and some are different. So Crescendo and Poco are our devices for pelvic pain, penetration pain, vulva pain, so that general area of pain. Legato is our device for arousal and dryness. It is a labia vibrator. And then Tenuto and Tenuto Mini are our device for erectile dysfunction. It vibrates the penis head, then the penis base, and the perineum. And then Molto is our device for prostatitis, so helps with help with prostate pain. So these are the six devices that focus on the four areas.
And with those, are you also providing education on how to use them in order to, because I'm assuming that people will come across them regardless of kind of what their previous experience was. They're a toy, they're going to find them, they're going to do the thing. But with the educational component to be able to kind of figure out, because I'm assuming too, let's back up the bus a bit, is that most people are going to use them in a way that's comfortable for them. And they're not going to veer into the pain side of things unless they're educated to do so and saying, hey, that's actually okay. And you actually do
Correct.
want to do that.
That's a really good point. With so for example, with Crescendo, we have a pelvic pain playbook, which has some text and some images. It's written by the pelvic floor therapist who helped design the product at Rush in Chicago. And because of it's so visual, it's really easy for you to follow if you don't have the option to go to a PT to learn. That which would obviously be the best option, but let's say you don't have that access. The visual guide, step by step, it has six pictures and a bit of text, so it helps you figure out what to do, how to try it, what is most likely to work for you. So yeah, we try to keep it really, really easy to follow, pictorial. And then we have videos on our site that people can watch. So yeah, no, very much so. It's we try to, and not just that, also help with start those conversations with their partner. So let's say somebody, ED, really easy example is, let's say you discover Tenuto and you know what's the video, you know how it works, you read the instructions, etc. But there is one last barrier, which is you need to introduce that to your partner and say, I got this device to help us improve our intimacy. But that is not always easy because you might not have had that conversation yet about needing help with ED. So so what we try to do is make the conversation really simple by saying, hey, this is a device I found, came across this in some newspaper, and it is designed to help the partner with arousal, which 9 out of 10 women need external arousal anyway, so which is very common. And then it changes the dynamic completely, where instead of saying, I bought a device because I have a problem, which is very difficult to talk about, is I bought a device as a gift for you because then you have strong vibrations for your arousal, and it will make sex better. So, we try to, again, through a lot of medical interactions and user surveys, we try to understand where are the barriers. And sometimes the barriers are purely conversation.
Love that. And anything that creates conversation amongst couples, I think, is a great conversation because we tend to avoid them, especially when they're a little awkward. So, do you get a lot of testimonials back from your clients? Do you get feedback from them as to what's working? Kind of things? Do you have any kind of ones that stand out for you? that you could share?
It's so there's two parts. One is, so we always create our products in two stages. We do a pilot 1000, where we build 1000, send it to the first user set, once it's safe to do, collect a lot of feedback where we proactively email them and say, you know, can you please give us any feedback you can think of which would make it better? So that's the early stage. And then we feed that on into production. And when we manufacture in bulk, they're already very good with 1,000 people's feedback. The second stage is we do post-market surveys. What that does is we reach out to everyone after, let's say, a few months of them having the product to see how they're getting on, anything you know we can do to make the experience better, but also what new products can we build. And that's the interesting bit is, you know, beyond a certain number of years, you won't really get much feedback on the existing products because hopefully, you know, you've already made it really, really good. So then where the feedback becomes valuable is, what should we build next? What matters? You know, what is the big thing that you're struggling with that there aren't any simple, easy, accessible solutions yet? And that's where, again, so for example, right now we're working on a period pin belt. It's like a little sticky vibrator that, like a sticky bra, which you stick on the lower abdomen. It vibrates very gently, very quietly. It's very slim. So you can stick it, wear your clothes on top, get on with your day. You can't hear it. You can feel it, obviously, but you know it's very effective. So, and again, that was purely driven by user feedback saying, that's one of my biggest pain points every month. And currently, there isn't really any solution beyond having some painkiller tablets, but that doesn't always work. And maybe that I don't want to take that all the time. So, so that led to us, and it's been 2 years already that we've been working on it, and it will be done next year. And we're really excited about how that can help people.
Very interesting. So is that kind of labia stimulated? Is that ural stimulated? Where is
purely is it directed to? Lower abdomen. So it's just below the belly button. So okay. It's like this strip that sits on the tummy, yep. And it vibrates and it helps with period pain. It's not on the genitals.
Very cool. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that. So I know our listeners are going to want more from you. How do they start the journey with you?
Simple, mysteryvibe.com. Everything is on there. Our blog content, our guides, our playbooks, our product videos, quiz. So like everything is on one site. And of course, they can contact us directly. My email, som@mysteryvibe.com. I always look forward to getting emails about any question. You know, we will find the answer. It doesn't matter what that question is. We'll talk to the right specialist, doctor, expert, you know, we will find the answer. So that's one of the big things we want to do and continue to do is answer questions, whether or not it has anything to do with our devices.
Love it. And obviously that is an opportunity for any question to be asked, especially ones you don't feel comfortable asking other people. They're going to find the right people to answer the question. So scroll down to the show notes. Of course, we'll have all of Som's links there. And be sure to keep listening because we're not done yet. So Som, at what point did you know that you were especially kind of crazy enough to think that you could become an entrepreneur?
It was purely by accident when I was doing my PhD and our research, which was in machine learning, pattern recognition, and building iris recognition systems, that worked and it was working well. So we got a lot of interest from like mostly in defense, US defense. And so my professor made that into a little company to monetize the research. And you know, that was the startup. So very accidental, very lucky, you know, it worked and it benefited the companies and one of them acquired it. And then, but I realized that because it was purely by chance. I didn't really know business. You know, it wasn't something I set up. It wasn't something I planned. I did the research and the development, and I got to experience what it's like to be in a startup, see it start, see it grow. We had $2 million in revenue, you know, by the time we sold it, which, you know, for a university spin out is a lot in 3 years' time. And I just felt like, you know, I needed to learn business. So I joined. So when I exited the company, when the company got acquired and exited, I just went to Deloitte and spent 7 years in consulting, trying to learn business and management. And then because I always wanted to get back to biomedical, because that's really all I have studied properly. And then I felt I had the foundations, the business understanding, the management understanding, the financial understanding, to start a much more complex company in hardware, in devices, in with lots of regulatory approvals. So yeah, I think it's the combination of having experienced a startup by luck, going through the business knowledge, and then meeting the right people, my colleagues, the doctors, who had all the knowledge combined to help us create devices and content and knowledge that can make a significant impact, like Crescendo, the pelvic pain device. The published study in the Journal of Sexual Medicine shows a 5x improvement in pain using it 3 times a week for 12 weeks. And that's a huge change in quality of life. So it's like living with pain, living without pain. I guess it's a very, much an evolution. When I was studying my undergrad, master's, PhD, postdoc, I never thought I'm studying this to be an entrepreneur. I mean, you don't really, there's no point, I don't think, in studying for a decade. If you want to start a company, you can definitely start a company without going through all the knowledge. So I studied just because I loved learning. And I guess we started the company because we wanted to bring all that knowledge and make it useful. And we didn't see it happening. Like, we didn't see anyone doing anything in sexual health for long enough. Because it's a very painful decision to quit a very simple life. Corporate life is easy, I think. You know, you have a good job, it's stable, you get paid really well. And why would you quit, right? So it needs to be something very significant to quit a very simple life for. So I think, you know, we're very lucky that over the last 10 years, we managed to create things that actually help people significantly in areas that affect almost everybody. So it was worth taking the risk, going through the pain and the years that it takes. But equally, you know, it could have not worked out. It could have been like, we could have spent a few years, realized that the technology doesn't work, or the technology just isn't there, or we're too early, the adoption isn't there, because there's so many things that can happen. And then I wouldn't have regretted it if that happened. You know, it would be fine. We tried, it didn't work, you know, we go back to our old jobs. So I think a lot of it is luck, especially with timing. So for example, menopause, you know, very easy one to explain. 10 years ago when we started, no one talked about it. Like, nothing. Now celebrities like Liz Hurley, very famous, you know, actress in UK, and she talks about it regularly, and many, many others. And this is outside our control. You know, no matter how good we are at creating devices or even creating conversations, changing society is something you kind of have to wait for a ride on, and you can contribute to it. But let's say if we started 20 years ago rather than 10 years ago, we would have been on our 10th year at a time when no one was still talking about it. No, yeah. So I think a lot of it is luck.
Love it. Well, and I love that the intention was to just cover the expenses and you end up with a $2 million revenue company. That's a great story.
Yeah, so to me, that was the simplest company I've ever been in. And because it was a B2B company, we built a software. You know, it was just myself and my professor and a business person. And it happened to work, and that was it. So it was so easy, right? And then in defense, they don't really care about like brand or marketing or anything. They're like, oh, does it work? Let's test it. We'll test it. Yeah, it works. You know, what's the license fee? And then, and budgets are massive. So, you know, you're like, okay, professor and the business person set the license fee, I think, at $200,000 a year. And for them, that was nothing, right? So they're like, oh, okay, fine. Because imagine, you know, they would use that unlimited users for a big corporate like Lockheed Martin paying $200,000. It's like a drop in the ocean. And they would get a really useful software that they can then use in thousands, 10,000, whatever cameras to deploy. So that's how, and we had 10 clients and that was it. It's a really, really simple business, which is why it was very misleading, you know, starting this where we had to do everything, B2C, B2B, devices, software, brand, marketing.
It was your gateway drug.
Medical research. It was like, you know, we literally did every possible thing you can imagine that you can do in a company. We did it in Mr. Vibe. So I think having the first startup too easy was a shock to the system entering the second startup.
Right. Absolutely. And you've received a bunch of awards for the work that you have done with these. Yeah.
Yes. I think now it's at 40. Maybe we've got 40 awards over the last 10 years. Our proudest one is we won Design Week, which is one of the most prestigious design awards for our product. And we beat Apple Watch.
Congratulations. So, that's awesome. So
that was our proudest moment when it comes to awards. Yeah, I mean, the thing is I think the reason we've won so many awards, beyond obviously, you know, the products are really well made, but there are lots of really good products, which I love, like Apple Watch, is the impact of what our products can do and the often groundbreaking conversations that it creates, which very rarely happens in hardware. All right, because normally what would happen in hardware is, let's say, you know, the new example of the Apple's vision, the goggles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am sure it will be an impressive, immersive experience, really well made. You know, it will have lots of nice applications, but it is iterative. Like, you know, there are Oculus, there's Magic Leap, there's Google Glass. It is getting better and better, right? But it isn't creating something that has never existed before. And I think that is where we managed to win awards against the big guys whose hardware is obviously impeccable. But let's say Molto, our prosthetic device, there's no such thing yet where there's an FDA medical device that a doctor can recommend to a patient to use at home to address prostatitis. It just doesn't exist. So I think that is how we won 40 awards, is the judges get very excited seeing people finally working on topics they probably have experienced either themselves or someone very close to them.
So I love it. Well, congratulations. That is fantastic. And you have been absolutely awesome. So any last words for our peeps?
I think for me, because I love hardware and love medtech, it's just encouraging people, if they are really thinking about venturing into their first startup or, you know, starting something new, having done one or two before, is if they haven't considered healthcare generally or med devices, to definitely look into it, whether to start on their own or to join something that somebody else is starting or has started, because we need more people with the passion of an entrepreneur, the drive to solve problems in medtech, in healthcare. It is a tough area, so it doesn't attract as many people as other fields, but it's extremely rewarding. You know, reading reviews like, I remember one of our patients had colorectal cancer, and he was 40, you know, very young, and he wanted to have kids. He recovered from cancer, you know, through surgery, but that led to erectile dysfunction, so he couldn't have intercourse with his wife, and they really desperately wanted to have kids. And then from his doctor, he learned about one of our devices, Tenuto, and that helped him get erect, ejaculate, and have a baby. So yeah, you know, like, that is the kind of feedback you read and you think you've changed someone's life, and you can do that at scale, hopefully for millions of people. And then it's totally worth the 10 years that has gone into making that.
Well, that's wonderful. That is so great to hear. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it, and I know how valuable it is.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Peeps, this is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for being here with us today. Be sure to subscribe to the show and share it with your friends. We love helping entrepreneurs grow. Thank you for listening to 7 to 8. If you're interested in upping your speaking game, be sure to connect with our guests with the links in the show notes, and connect with me to see how we can help you get your tech done for you and help your speaking dreams come true.